welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. We have a really exciting topic to talk about this week. We're going to talk all about customer development and outbound email and sales. But first, Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, aside from a little cold here. So Memorial Day was fantastic, but it's been wet and rainy out here in Colorado instead of the warm and sunny that I'm used to. So trying to get into some spring weather before they decide to dump summer on us.
Yeah, you guys are quite spoiled with your weather over there. I think it's every time I go, it's so beautiful. I say, God, I could live here, and this would be wonderful. And then I come home, and it's just, you know, whatever. But anyways, we have actually had really pleasant weather here in the South for the last couple of weeks, and it's just getting some of those days that are just, you know, we dread them like you guys dread your winter, I think. So it's the flip-flop. But anyway, what's going on with SupportVine?
So I have been in the throes of customer support for the past few – or not customer support. I'm always in customer support. What the hell am I talking about? We are in the throes of customer development. So I decided to dig deeper because I wasn't finding that I really had sort of like this unique selling proposition that was really resonating with people. The more I talked to individuals, the more they're like, gosh, that sounds really good. But – you kind of sound like Groover Help Scout. I'm like, oh, well, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. So I went back to the drawing board, even though we're, you know, well along the way to a product at this point, and tried to figure out, okay, well, what is it that I could add? Because everything that I built up to this point, I probably would have had to build no matter what. So that's okay. At least that's not so bad. But what I did go back and do is I jumped on LinkedIn. And, you know, this is like literally the first time I've ever found something valuable to use LinkedIn for. But this is it. This is like the one thing it's been worthy of. And I dug up on my 400 some odd connections that are on there. I dug up about 50 to 60 people. I forget the exact number that, you know, are either related to my field of customer support or have past experience in that field, or have like some CXO title in a company where clearly they would have somebody doing that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I went and started cold emailing them. And I say cold because, you know, a lot of them I haven't really talked to in years since I worked at whatever company with them. But a lot of them are, you know, friends of mine from former companies or whatever. So you could call them lukewarm emails or whatever. And of that, I've been getting some fantastic insight and information. And I think SupportVine is going to pivot a little bit. And I emphasize the word pivot, or I emphasize the word little here, because it's not really going to change exactly what I want. But I think I might actually move up mid-market to try to hit those companies that are doing like small call centers. Because the one thing that I found so far is that if you want to do like call center software, the only way to get that is if you like go well into the enterprise solutions and nobody else really supports that.
Yeah.
So I would kind of be like the WP engine of customer support, if you will. So I'm kind of excited about that. I'm still doing more development about it. I haven't totally validated it. I haven't gotten 10 people that are like, I will pay you money to build that. But I am well on my way to that. So unpack
that a little for me, the analogy of the WP engine for support. Who's your ideal customer then?
Okay, well, so let me back up with the WP engine comment there. So Jason Cohen gave a talk at Microconf, I don't remember how many years ago. He basically was saying that when they were doing their validation of their idea, he was trying to figure out how could they do a managed hosting solution for WordPress. And they realized that there's like this high end stuff with WordPress.com, and then there was like the low end stuff with like Bluehost and Dreamhost and these guys, and he basically realized there was this massive gap in the mid market. So that's what WP Engine became known for, is mid market WordPress hosting. So I'm kind of trying to find a slot for mid-market customer support tools.
Okay.
In a similar vein. So that's really what that's about.
Got it. Okay. And in terms of price point, where is something like Groove located?
Well, they're definitely toward the lower end of the scale. They charge per user. They have a very simple price model. It's $15 per person that's using the system. And so that's certainly a fine way to go. But everybody, like, there's a bunch of other smaller competitors around them that all do the exact same thing. So if I brought SupportVine into that market, then basically I'm a me too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really
a shitty spot to be.
It's a shitty spot to be in because they're the ones getting the press. They're the ones who've been out there before. They're the ones that say, you know, we're the simple one for small teams. So they've got a tagline. They've got a unique selling proposition and everybody else is just chasing after them. I realize that is a losing proposition if I go chasing after that exact same thing. So I have to go different. And I think this is it.
I agree. I mean, just on the surface, at least, I agree that I think that anything in a Me Too sort of scenario is a losing proposition as a newcomer, whatever the unique angle, whether it's quality or scale or access or scope. Even if it's at a higher price, I think is going to set you up for success as opposed to trying to compete in an environment where other people are already established and have their unique selling propositions.
Exactly. The thing that differentiated me when I was doing the WordPress plugins was that I offered really killer customer support where people were getting less than 24-hour turnaround times when they were contacting me, and nobody else did that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even now, nobody else is really doing that. It's not an easy thing to do. So a few people have tried and they realize that that's something that requires a deep commitment to support and not everybody gets that. So it's an easy thing for me to remain as a differentiator.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So without revealing too much, you know, so Groove is something like $15 a month. You're thinking about something in the $50 to $100 a month range?
Something like that. Yeah. Okay. And it would be, you know, there'll be a number of people that are on the team. I mean, I have the pricing page on there now. Until I have more input and information on what sort of the ideal team sizes are for these mid-market call centers, which I'm still working on, it's going to be hard for me to set the price point so that they get good value out of that. I have to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more customer development.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's
now, what about – oh, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a pretty big pivot. I think it's a great pivot, though. I think it's great to realize early on relatively. I mean, you're almost done with development, but your product still can pivot into a different niche. I think it's great that you're realizing, you know, hey, I have something that can fit in a lot of different buckets and that the best bucket probably is, you know, this one over here. That's a good thing to get figured out before you get out the door.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like there's some other possible places to pivot as well. It's not clear that those places to pivot are quite as lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, this is something that I'm doing more and more customer development to actually validate that assumption at this point. So, I mean, I have some hypotheses that have popped up from my initial contacts of these 60 people. And then now I'm trying to go back and go through and validate those by finding other people that are like the people that responded positively in certain ways and seeing if I can repeat that over and over and over again. And if I can find, you know, 10 people that basically are saying the same thing and they're all like, yeah, I'll pay you that $100 a month for that.
Yeah.
Then I feel like, okay, great. I've now validated my thing to the point where I can go out and hit this particular niche here with some solid expected response.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So how's Podcast Motor doing?
It is going great. It's going really good. I have, you and I haven't talked about it in a few weeks. We have 1, 2, 3, at least 3 customers coming on to the concierge service next month, just in terms of when they're launching their show and things like that. A couple more in an evaluation stage, I'll say, and a couple more customers in what I'll call kind of the late sales cycle. So we've already talked and we're trying to figure out, you know, what plan would fit and things like that. So we're looking at, you know, the growth potential to really go up kind of significantly. And I think in my mind, at least around the business and the notoriety we're getting in this space, which is kind of where I think most of our growth will come from, we're poised for that growth. And this is kind of where I expect it, right? So, I mean, our first couple of customers are all word of mouth. Now we're kind of like that second tier of word of mouth, and I'm getting just brand new cold inbound leads on the website for people that I don't know, and I don't think know people that I know. So that's kind of where that second or third, you know, what is it, 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, right?
Yeah, but so, without Kevin Bacon at this point, so we'll just have to, you know, make some real bacon, I guess. That'll be
right, right.
Yeah, so we're making 7 degrees of bacon. Pork bacon.
Yeah. So that's kind of where it is. I took some very good advice I heard from Stelly, and it was to double your price, and so I did. We launched two new tiers of Podcast Motor. So the concierge service has always been $499 a month. Mm-hmm. And we lowered, we created essentially two other monthly tiers. So one is $295 for just getting the audio file back with editing and mixing in intro and outro, as well as the show notes, which is something that a lot of people are asking for. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of created a monthly package for that. And then we created a premium tier of $9.99 a month. That is everything the concierge service gives you, which is basically creating the whole show plus transcripts, which is great for SEO, and scheduling of guests.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's the big one. I can see some people, you think about the Nathan Berry's out there. Say, hey, I want to do a show every week. I want to get these really killer guests on. I don't have 2 hours a week to, dick around with getting these people on my show. I'll give you a list of 20 people. I want you to go out and make contact with them, schedule them, use Calendly, whatever.
Yeah.
And I just think about the value of that, and everyone preaches value-based pricing. The value of that is at least what we would charge to all these important, busy entrepreneurs and small business owners. And to the point where we would create that list for people, assuming that we're operating in the small business and entrepreneurial niche, which is kind of where I'm pigeonholing myself. You know, we're not just podcast editing and production. We are podcast editing and production for small business and entrepreneurs.
Nice. Yep. Honing the message, getting some customers involved. I'm loving it, man. I'm loving all of it.
Yep. So I think it's good. So I think, and we're looking at getting some massive customers, massive in terms of notoriety. So I hope to announce some of those here very soon. Probably next week, we'll be able to announce our newest customer is a name that everyone has heard of. And another one that I just got a very, very solid kind of interaction with today that I would say is maybe on everyone's podcast playlist, not just people that would listen to our show. So it's very exciting.
I'm getting all tingly over here. Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about, so I'm excited. This is a surprise even to me.
Yeah, no. So I mean, you and I haven't talked in a while, but it's great. I mean, we're poised for some serious growth, and it's just a matter of capitalizing on it at this point.
Awesome.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep. So what do you think? Let's jump into cold emailing. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think anything that makes people uncomfortable is great stuff to talk about.
You know, another quote that I heard recently is, you know, if you look back on your year and you're not embarrassed at something you did last year, then you're doing it wrong. And so that's kind of cold email, I think, to me, right? So like if you look back at your initial cold email experience and you're not embarrassed with what you did, then you started too late, right?
Right, right.
So, let's look at the scope of what a cold email campaign looks like and what you need to get started and what you need to kind of progress through things. And I think we can both talk about what we've done and what we're going to do to get a good campaign out the door. What do you think?
Sure. Sounds good. All right. So the first thing you're going to want to do, you know, you're not just going to be sending that email to nothing. You've got to have a list of somebody to do it to. So when I was talking to my update earlier, obviously I started with a list of 460 contacts that I had from LinkedIn. And I pared that down into ones that I thought were actually very valid. And certainly that's one way to get a list. And it probably, you know, will make you finally not regret the sign up for LinkedIn after all these years. I mean, seriously, do you use LinkedIn for anything else?
No, I don't use it for anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I think LinkedIn is like the most worthless social network ever. But anyway, this was like the one time it finally paid off. Now, there's not, LinkedIn is not your only source here. And in fact, LinkedIn might not even be the right set of people that you're looking for. So, for example, if you're trying to contact, in Craig's case, a bunch of people that are running podcasts, LinkedIn is not going to be a good source. You're probably going to want to go out there and look at all the different podcasts. So like dig it up on iTunes and then start going to the individual websites, finding out how to contact these people. If you're doing WordPress plugins and you're trying to find, hey, I want to acquire something and maybe I want to ask a bunch of people about, you know, what are their ideas about this particular kind of plugin? Well, you might want to scrape that from the WordPress directory here. So whatever niche that you're working in, there's got to be something where people are hanging out or some kind of directory or something that you can use. And you may have to get creative here, but there's got to be a list of something. The trick is to find what that list is. And if you're not sure what the list is, well, then you can start asking around, ask smart people that you know, see if they've got any ideas, see if they know people that know that ideas. So you got to work it. Now, the thing about lists is that you definitely have to be careful. Some lists are going to be much better than others. If you ever buy a list, you are almost always going to have complete and utter crap on your hands. Have you ever bought a list before?
No. So I paid someone to create a list for me, but it is not from a directory.
Okay.
So
that's a little different.
I did what you would do of going through a WordPress directory. I had someone go through iTunes, actually go to the show page and get an email address for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just paid a VA to do what I could do, which just would take forever, and it, I paid him $4 an hour.
Right. So I don't know where I got on these particular lists, but every now and then in my inbox, although I aggressively try to spam them out, I get these emails about have 400,000 CEO, CTO emails worldwide that you can contact and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the business model here is that they've got a list of something that they probably acquired from somebody else. They sell it to you for a couple hundred dollars, and then you basically have crap on your hands. If you start emailing these people, you know, they're most likely just going to come back and say, you're spam. I never gave you my email. I don't want to hear from you, blah, blah, blah. If you enter them into something like MailChimp, it's basically going to get you blacklisted by them, might get you blacklisted by your ISP. So that's definitely something you probably don't want to do, even though that possibility exists out there. I've not seen that successful. I've never heard of anybody who's launched a business and went, oh, yeah, I bought an email. I bought this database. It all worked out great. I've never heard anybody doing that, and I certainly wouldn't do that myself.
Yep.
Now, scraping is another possibility here, which I mentioned before, like scraping stuff from a directory. That can be a little bit of a moral gray area. You kind of want to test the waters on that with a few of those things that you would pull from the directory before going all in. You know, maybe test like 10 contacts out of there and see what that response is. Because 10 people telling you that you're a dirty spammer is a lot better than trying to email 1,000 and then suddenly find out that you've been blacklisted. That's going to be a problem.
Yeah. 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 And I'll just add to that, that, I think that if you are sort of creating value and offering something interesting in an email and not sending 1,000 of them at a time, you're probably safe. And Dave, we should link to what is a pretty good, under the description, I'll say, that regards the Can Spam Act.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. It actually is a pretty good guideline of things you can and can't do. So I'll just talk a little bit about what I'm planning on. So I bought a list. It's 200 email addresses, contact names, show notes for podcasts, and the niche that they're in. So I'm going to send some sort of semi-customized campaign to these 200 people, but I'll do it 20 at a time probably over the next 10 batches, and that'll be twice a week maybe. And each one will be very soft, right? So it's not going to be, hey, I can help you with your SEO type email. It will be, hey, I just did this article. Here it is. Da-da-da. By the way, we're doing X. And the thing I think to remember about a cold campaign is that it shouldn't be trying to close someone in the first email. You just want to start the conversation.
Yeah, you're not trying to – yeah, so this is the dating analogy. You're not trying to get them in the sack on the first date.
Right.
You're trying to get them to want to go on a second date, basically.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think anything you can do to ask them some questions, offer a piece of information you just published, point them to a podcast maybe to say, hey, this is a really good thing. Maybe you should think about this when you are doing X. As a way to start the conversation. And then down the road, you can say, oh, by the way, this is a tool we use in sales. I call it the Columbo. You know, right? He's Columbo's asking all the questions and he says, oh, by the way, right at the end. And that's when he gets them. And so you can pull the Columbo on someone on the third or fourth email interaction, but not on the first.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Right. So, yeah, I'm using, yeah. So, Yesware is great for just email tracking on an outbound basis. But then the big one I think comes into, like you were talking about with your tags, is how to follow up with people later on. And I think it goes to both people that have responded and people who haven't. And I think they're in different buckets, but people who have responded, obviously you kind of continue the dialogue with them, say, hey, you know, thanks for this and this and this, but hey, what about that? Or hey, what do you think about this? Or check out this. But the people that haven't responded, I think, can get a different second email. You know, if your first one was a real softball, the second one can be a little more direct maybe and ask some real pointed questions. Or it could be, you know, hey, know you're super busy, but just wanted to share this thing with you. And I don't think you want to ping them too often, but I think if you're going to send one email to someone, they deserve at least two or three from you, and each time giving a little more value. And you would probably be surprised at how the open rates and the response rates would go up over time. And the timing of that will be very different than someone who responds to you directly. I think someone who responds to me directly, they deserve an email back the same day. Someone who doesn't respond, probably the next week I would send them something else, and it would be a super informational article or podcast or whatever, resource for them, and not asking for anything in return.
Right. The value is really the key here, because if you're just contacting them and asking for something, most people are like, boop, delete, yeah, I'm done. No more. If you demonstrate that you actually have something to share, something to teach, something that would be useful to them, like a report, or you can say, hey, give me your URL and I can generate this whole SEO report. I know that was big for a while, where they would basically run auto crawlers on your site and then come back and say, hey, you've got all these keywords and here's what you rank for in Google and here's how I can fix it. That was a big thing for the SEO crowd for a long time, that was a way of getting people to contact them back and start a dialogue about that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The value, it's all about the value. There's no question about it. Now, I think there's some other important things about the email itself. Once you've offered some value, you don't, when you're starting to get more into the call to action part, you don't want to use language that implies that they're going to have to do some work for you, because people don't like work. I learned that from Joanna Wiebe from Copy Hackers on MicroConf of this year. So it's things like start a trial or learn more. You know, it's like, I'm going to have to work to get that out of there. And that doesn't sound so fun. But if it's like something that directly addresses a pain or a problem that I'm having or that you're talking about in the email, like, yeah, I want to make more money, or I want more customers, or I want to spend time not doing my podcast editing, or I save time doing invoices now. You know, those are things that I might click on because they imply that they're going to be highly valuable to me. They're going to either give me things that I want or take away things that I don't want. But it doesn't, neither of those cases do I actually have to work harder to get those things, at least not from that particular piece of copy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that a good resource to point out here, since we're kind of wrapping up the content of the emails, is a site called breakthroughemail.com. We'll include a link in the show notes here. They're just great at how to write really solid, well-crafted, compelling emails. Brian over there is kind of an artist, I think, with email, and I've been getting his stuff for a while. He offers kind of a outbound campaign service similar to LeadFuse, but just the amount of information he gives away in his email list is really great, just on how to write good, compelling emails that convert. And so if anybody wants to check more out, go over to breakthroughemail.com. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yep.
Now, a couple of other things that I'd say in the email there, you know, now that you've put a compelling subject line in there, you've got body copy that's, you know, clear and concise and it's to the point, you've got value in the copy there. When you do make the ask, make sure you've only got one ask in there, one call to action. If you have multiple things in there, hey, sign up for this email list or learn more about this over here, then you're not really going to get as good a response because your customers are going to be confused about what they're actually supposed to be doing there. You know, in the case of my customer development emails, it was answers to four simple questions. That's it. I didn't want them to do anything else. You know, at the very end, I had a little note that says, if you don't want me to do this anymore, just let me know. I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was their little opt out, but it was still focused on just getting them to give me the answers to those four simple questions.
And so what are you going to do if the people don't respond to your email?
Well, I'm going to take the tip from Stelly at MicroConf this year. And it's basically, he said 99% of the time that he wins, it's because he just keeps following up until he gets an F off or he gets a full yes. Silence is never an answer. So, you know, for introverted engineers, that can be really hard, right? So you send off an email and they don't respond. You're like, oh, they hate me. I'm never loved. You know, it's like the Eeyore comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just discourages you from sending more email back. Well, a lot of the times, here's the reality. They're busy. They forgot about you. They got 138 emails that day and you weren't the top five priorities in there. Or maybe they put you on a thing to say, well, I'm going to respond to them in a week or something like that. So you just follow up with them. You just keep doing that. So I set a reminder and, you know, put something on that says today's follow-up day. And then I go back and look to see who hasn't responded, who has. If somebody's responded, then I take them off the list. If they haven't, I put up a little, hey, just following up. Want to see if you had time to answer those questions. If you don't, that's cool. Let me know. Otherwise, I'd love to hear from you. You know, short, sweet, to the point. But let them know that you're still thinking about it. You're following up with them. And potentially, you're going to hound the crap out of them until they actually say something. And that's the way to get a response.
It's huge, man. I mean, following up, I think you and I talked about this a little bit as part of the MicroConf wrap-up show or kind of recap show, and I've taken it and run with it, man, and let me tell you, I probably have 75%+ of my customers in Podcast Motor are all from at least third email follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I'm solving a decent problem here, but it's not like invoicing where they can't live without it. It's something that's really nice, but it's not like a ultimate have to have it thing. I've emailed some high profile people a couple of times and didn't get anything. And then got that'd be great. When can we start? Here's some information. Let's get rolling. And you know, for anyone out there who thinks that they're bugging people, as long as you're polite and offering some value and giving compelling reasons for them to take action, you're not going to get a fuck you very often. You might, but that's fine. So then you know it's one less person to worry about. But
they're not your target market.
They're not your customer, and you don't need everyone to be your customer. I mean, at $100 a month, Dave, you don't need a ton of customers. You need 100 customers, and you're set, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I think that's an important thing to think about too. With outbound email, is you're starting with a giant list, right? You're starting with 600 people on LinkedIn or whatever it is. You need 30 responses to have a really good feel of what the question you're going after really looks like.
Right. And then of those responses, you've got to have some fraction of those that converts over. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're going to be doing that. It's not 30 cold emails you're sending out. It's more like 300 or 3,000 eventually. You've got to bust your hump to get this to work. There's no question about it. But like Stelly said, 99% of the time, because he wins, he does it because he follows up. So, and I'm seeing the same things. I have to believe that it works.
Yep, absolutely. I'm going to throw in one other tool here, and it really just is just because I'm operating in my email client. But a lot of times, a tool like a CRM is going to be needed. You know, so talking about Stelly, Close.io is a great tool. I've looked at it. For me, I need something pretty simple just because I have kind of like a unit step. Either they're going to buy, they're not going to buy, or they're going to go into like an informational bucket. And I'm using a tool called Streak. And it's a CRM that just lives in Gmail. So it's great. So I don't ever have to leave Gmail. So Yesware takes care of mail merge and tracking and open rates and things like that. And then Streak is just a tab kind of over on the left of Gmail. So it's like a folder that I can put customers into several different pipelines. And so like, you know, they're in the sales pipeline, they're in the informational pipeline, they're in the podcast pipeline, and then I can go back to open those pipelines and say, where is this person in the process, open it up and communicate with them again. It's just a nice way to kind of stay organized, and I love that it stays, keeps me in Gmail, so I don't have to open yet another browser tab.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense there. And everything that you just described is the same sort of stuff that you would end up doing, like, for example, if you're on an email autoresponder, which is basically the same thing. You're putting people into the pipeline, but from an entirely different source. So right now with SupportVine, I have an email autoresponder on the site trying to capture people that is about, you know, how to become a support ninja. So I'm looking for people that are interested in support, want to kind of level that up and their skills on it. And when I capture them through that, the point is that I'm, you know, providing value by teaching them something. And as the 7-day course goes along, the pitch gets a little stronger toward the end. And then at the very end, you know, it's kind of the hard sell on it. But afterwards, you know, I have it tagged so that if I don't hear back from somebody, I put them into a different pipeline than somebody who actually was clicking on those things and signed up for a trial. So you've got a nice way to split your customers into various things and then start asking them different questions. So that's something that I get from Drip, which is a little more advanced here and doesn't work for the cold email so much. But it works great if you're doing, you know, on-site autoresponders and trying to develop a pipeline that way. But it's basically the exact same stuff. You just have to put it in a different tool.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. And the goal, to your point, the goal should be all the people that you start off a cold campaign with, you should create a conversation enough with them to be able to put them into your autoresponder series, or they should want to convert to your autoresponder series if you're kind of communicating and delivering value at a high enough level.
Sure. Like you said, that informational bucket. So you're yep. building up some trust. You want to start that relationship and build that rapport with them. The great way to do that is through teaching them stuff, and then eventually they're like, yeah, this person actually kind of knows something about this, and that kind of resonates with me, and yeah, maybe I'm interested in checking out their tool. So it definitely will build value in the end.
Yep. So this is – I'm glad we're talking about this today. We're going to be speaking with Brian Harris of VideoFruit.com. Is that next week? I think we're talking to him.
I think so, yes.
Next week. So those will be a bit of an email series that we're developing here. And we're going to – so this is kind of the outbound approach to it. Brian, we're going to talk all about list building and getting a big email list, which I think everyone agrees is kind of the way to, you know, promote a product or a service online is to build and maintain a high-quality email list. And coincidentally, I don't know if you saw, Rob and Mike, Startups for the Rest of Us, are doing a multi-part series on building an email list starting this week. So we're
in
good company.
Yeah. Apparently that's the hot topic du jour here.
Oh, I do have one. I have one shameless plug here. So, you know, this is talking about outbound, you know, sales efforts and customer development. I am kind of full-on content creation mode with Podcast Motor at this point. So as a bit of a shameless plug, we're putting out blog articles every week, and we're going to start ramping that up to doing probably twice a week on the Podcast Motor blog. But something else we're doing is we are starting a Podcast Motor podcast, and I believe I'm going to be calling it Podcastonomics, and the idea being it is sort of around the business of podcasting and what people are doing to use podcasting as a content marketing tool to support an underlying business. So I think very few people believe that a podcast in and of itself is a business, but it very well could be a major driver of your business. And so we're going to be bringing people on to talk about how they're using the podcast to sort of further and develop their business. I had the first interview yesterday with someone that's part of the 5x5 network, so that was pretty cool. And we are, I am going to be interviewing a handful of people over in the next couple of weeks. So if anyone out there is interested in hopping on Skype for a few minutes to talk about how they're using a podcast to kind of develop and support and further their business, shoot me an email, craig@roguestartups.com, and would love to hop on Skype and chat with you about it.
How very meta. Sounds exciting.
Yeah, I think it'll be cool. I think it'll be an interesting format. I don't see anyone else really talking about it. So either I'm way off or it'll be really cool.
There's not much in between there.
Yep.
So how many simultaneous podcasts are you going to be able to handle? And at what point does your wife say, dude, you are not doing any more podcasts?
You've got to come to bed. This one is going to be very short. It's going to be like 15 minutes.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And so, I can't handle a lot more, but it is kind of my business, so I should be doing it to a pretty big extent.
Indeed. Yep. Well, exciting. Looking forward to hearing more about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that'll take us out, guys. Thanks so much for hopping on the show today. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Rogue Startups Podcast. The show notes for this episode can be found at roguestartups.com/episode15. Dave, have a good week.
You too.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.